You are listening to a free podcast of The Majority Report with Sam Cedar. To support the show and receive nearly an hour extra material daily, become a member today at majority.fm. Resistance is futile.
The Majority Report with Sam Cedar.
The destiny of America is always safer in the hands of the people than in the conference rooms of any elite.
Sam Cedar.
They are unanimous in their hate for me, and I welcome their hatred.
We must guard against the acquisition of unwarranted influence, whether sought or unsought, by the military-industrial complex.
The Majority Report with Sam Cedar.
And I get the feeling you've been cheated.
It is Monday, February 4th, 2013. My name is Sam Cedar. This is the award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live in the literal, though not metaphorical, shadow of the New York Times building in the fashionable Dollar Lunch District of New York City. Today on the program, Julia Samuels from the Electronic Frontier Foundation. She is the Mark Cuban chair to eliminate stupid patents. Seriously. We will be talking to her about stupid patents and attempts by patent trolls to leverage cash from people who may be in businesses like what do they refer to that as? The podcast business. Different, of course, from doing live radio, one hopes. Also on the program today, Bob Edgar from Common Cause. Recorded an interview I did with him last week on the filibuster reform. Will be interesting to juxtapose his perception of what happened with filibuster reform with Senator Whitehouse's perspective. Also on the program today, Brooklyn College under assault for daring to hold an event, I guess, to educate their students about the BDS, which is the Boycott, Divestment and Sanctions Movement against Israel over their occupation. Harvard, apparently, a lot of students getting ready to enter politics as they were charged with cheating. And a wonderful array of just sort of cultural dicks, as it were. People who are just being dickish. We'll talk more about that. And, I guess we could include Governor LePage in that. But first, ladies and gentlemen, before we go to Julia Samuels, last week there was a lot of concern in Massachusetts following the nomination of John Kerry as Secretary of State that Massachusetts, we would be looking at another special election where Scott Brown could jump in with high name recognition. Will be facing either Ed Markey or Stephen Lynch at this point, as far as we can tell. Not quite sure. Well, last week, Scott Brown made the announcement that he would not be seeking the nomination, the Republican nomination, to seek the empty Senate seat. Probably keeping his powder dry, as it were, for the governorship, and probably avoiding another humiliating loss. But one never knows. There was genuine concern. However, this news may shake Democrats to their core in Massachusetts, according to the Boston Herald. Republicans are looking to recruit Romney tag Romney to run for the empty Senate seat in Massachusetts. This would be a wonderful turn of events to watch Tag Romney lose badly. All of that sentiment against the Romneys focused on Tag. Tag, you're not it. Unclear whether or not Tag will join the race. But according to the Herald, Romney is mulling joining the race, quote, against remaining with his successful venture firm, capital firm, Solamere. So one can only hope that would be an interesting turn of events. Tag Romney probably will not become senator of Massachusetts. All right, we're going to take a break. When we come back, we'll be talking to Julia Samuels. There is a lawsuit against three major podcast networks, including Adam Carolla's Ace Network, the Discovery Network. What are the name of the podcast on?
How Stuff Works.
How Stuff Works. There's a good chance this may have, not a good chance. The outcome of this and other events may have direct outcome on the future of this program and others. I want to speak in hypothetical terms until I talk to an attorney, and we'll be talking to one in just a moment. We'll be right back. We are back. Sam Seder on the Majority Report on the phone. Julie Samuels. She is from the Electronic Frontier Foundation, an attorney who is the Mark Cuban chair to eliminate stupid patents. Welcome to the program, Julie.
Thanks for having me.
So now I want to talk about this in general terms, but the idea of stupid patents is prominently on my mind because it is public knowledge now that a couple of major podcast networks have been have been sued essentially by this company called Personal Audio, which I guess claims to have a patent on the whole process of podcasting. Just give me an overview of what your sense is that's going on here, and then let's talk about these stupid patents in general.
Sure. So, you know, unfortunately, what we've seen is that this is kind of typical right now, and it's really bad news. It's incredibly dangerous, you know, both for our economy and I think our society at large. But what these companies do is they get really broadly worded patents that are hard to understand, that are vague, that tie up, you know, basic ideas that we all take for granted, like podcasting, like using open Wi-Fi in a coffee shop. And the patent trolls start sending these threatening letters, probably not unlike the one you unfortunately got, to customers, to end users, to sometimes small companies. In the case of the open Wi-Fi patent, they started going after small coffee shops and nursing homes, and they demand a licensing fee. And they say, if you don't pay us a licensing fee because we think you probably infringe our patent, we're going to sue you. But here's the catch. Patent litigation is one of the most expensive kinds of litigation. It costs millions of dollars, takes years, and, you know, most people aren't in a position where they want to go through that cost, you know, both financial and of other resources that need to be displaced. So what do? They settle. They take the licensing fee, and you can understand why. It's a logical choice if you're trying to run a business, to grow a business, which is really unfortunate, because what we see then is that these really, frankly, crappy patents and the trolls, the patent trolls that use them as weapons, create what is essentially a tax on innovation.
So when this outfit sues these podcast networks, or presumably sends letters to other podcasts and says, you should get our license, or, you know, have your patent lawyer you know, take a look and see if you're violating our patent. Now, just, you know, I can tell you that from my own personal experience, we fired our patent lawyer some time ago the Majority Report, just because he was just really messy around the office, and so we just have not hired someone since then. But for instance, this in the case of what's happening with Corolla and these others, their patent basically, and this is the way that they describe it, is a system for disseminating media content representing episodes in a serialized sequence. That seems like just about every media, doesn't it?
Yeah. Well, and you know, that's exactly the problem. So I think you've got to take a step back to kind of understand what's going on here.
I'm trying.
It's confusing. Some people think it's slightly dry subject matter, but I don't, so that's good. You know, most of these patents are software patents. And until about 20 years ago, we really didn't have many software patents in the United States. So it's a relatively new phenomenon. And there are a lot of things that don't make sense about software patents. For instance, the technology moves so quickly, but yet the monopoly is for 20 years. So by the time the patent is granted, often the technology is obsolete. Or, you know, what we've seen, the data show that software patents are notoriously broad, notoriously vague. They don't make sense. Lawyers oftentimes don't understand them. Software engineers don't understand them. And then the patent trolls are able to take advantage of this really broad language and say, you infringe this, and even if you don't, it's so hard to figure out that it's going to take juries and expert witnesses, and who wants to spend all that money? So these trolls, for that reason, are able to shut down, you know, or extract tons of money for these broad processes like podcasting.
Now, I mean, for instance, like, you know, and I'm just getting this from Wikipedia, but I mean, it's clear that podcasting existed in the early 90s, or even in the 1980s, some form of disseminating audio content in this way. And
right.
Yet this company says that they filed a patent in 2012, and
right.
That was based on another patent that they had in 96. How is it they're issued this patent, I mean, for stuff that has already existed?
Well, you bring up a good point, and there are a lot of concerns about quality at the patent office, about the quality of the patents that actually make it out of the patenting process, and those are really legitimate concerns. You are, of course, not supposed to be able to get a patent on an invention that either already exists or an invention that otherwise would be obvious. And, you know, it seems that this patent seems a little troubling on its face. There are a bunch of different processes to challenge the validity of a patent. You can kind of file something at the patent office saying, patent office, you screwed up this patent. Let's revisit it. Let's re-examine it. But that costs thousands of dollars and requires a lawyer, and it's just not easy. And what's so troubling, frankly, about where we found ourselves in this situation is all these people who don't want to be before the patent office, like you know, you fired your patent lawyer. you don't want to mess with the patent office. You just want to do your thing. You just want to do your business. But then you find yourself having no choice. You're really affected by this system that hasn't been set up to protect your best interests.
And the irony is, you know, the idea of patents is in the Constitution, but this is a sort of a fundamental building block, but it's clearly being abused. So in other words, these guys, or let's just say, speak about it hypothetically speaking, go in, they file a patent because they have the cash, they know they can outlast essentially anybody that they go after, and this is, it just seems to be sort of extortion in a way.
I think that's right. I think that's really fair. And, you know, again, I think it's important to take a step back to understand kind of where the wheels fell off the system. I just think it's better to understand what's really going on. And that has to do with this problem with software. I firmly believe this. So think for a second about patents on pharmaceuticals, okay, on drugs. A drug company is developing a new drug. They need to take it through 3 rounds of testing at the FDA. On animals, on humans, and on humans again. They'll oftentimes spend close to $1 billion developing a drug, and sometimes at the end of, you know, a decade and all that testing, they'll find out the drug doesn't even work in humans. So you can understand why maybe the government would want to incentivize that kind of investment by offering a 20-year monopoly in exchange. Hey, work really hard, develop this drug that'll be good for society, and we'll give you this monopoly to make your money back. It doesn't make sense with software. And that fundamental disconnect has really led to this problem.
And so what is the recourse? Is it statutory? I mean, I know that you've been working on legislation to deal with this. Tell us a little bit about that.
So to answer your first question, and I will tell you briefly about the legislation, I think there is not one silver bullet right now, short of getting rid of software patents entirely. But there are a bunch of potential fixes that are happening that I think a combination of which would make the world a lot better. One of those is this legislation that's currently pending. It's called the SHIELD Act. It's in the House. And it essentially would require in certain cases that the patent troll who brings a lawsuit pay the fees and expenses of the winning party. So if the patent troll brings a suit and loses, it has to pay the millions of dollars it costs to fight. And that's important because part of what the troll business model, is premised on is this idea that it's so expensive to fight the trolls in court that no one does. Mm. So we're trying to level the playing field a little bit, right, to incentivize these parties to fight back so that the trolls can't just kind of walk all over everyone. There are some other things happening. There are court cases. There is a case right now pending in D.C. that could limit the scope of these dangerous patents. We're filing briefs there, waiting to see what happens. And there are also self-help options. Companies like Twitter have been really great on this. A company called Newegg just fought a really egregious patent troll and won. There is an academic paper right now that proposes what's called a defensive patent licensing scheme, where parties would all freely license their patents to each other and promise not to sue on them. I think that those kind of self-help remedies are also going to be really important to make the system work better for people. These are all things we're working on. In fact, we've got a bunch of suggestions up on a website called defendinnovation.org, mm-hmm. where we're actually soliciting comments from people who actually work in the field, people who actually have companies, people who are actually software engineers, to find out what would help and what wouldn't help. And then we're going to take those comments to D.C., to the Hill, and say, hey, it's time to fix this problem. And people are listening right now. They care. People in D.C. are calling. They want to know why the problem is so big and what we can do to make it better. So I'd encourage anyone who's interested to go to defendinnovation.org and help us kind of push this forward.
Now, is it possible that there can be legislation to simply negate specific patents?
That's a good question, to go after certain patents. So there are some laws that determine what can and cannot be patented. So that's more subject matter, you know, it's kind of subject matter specific, and we might be able to play around a little bit with that. But that's pending in the courts right now. And basically why that's relevant, and this, I hope it's not too in the weeds, but the idea is that the law currently says you can't patent an abstract idea. Because how can you own an abstract idea? That's an absurd proposition. And to many people, you know, software and algorithms and the code that makes up the basis of these ridiculous patents is actually rather abstract. So that fight is being heard in the courts, you know, this month.
Right. I mean, so in the instance of the podcast, if there's no particular mechanism, but rather just a concept of disseminating audio content online in the same way that you would, you know, a blog post, right? I mean, because if it's, you know, an RSS feed, essentially, that would be an idea, right? As opposed to sort of a specific tool, it seems to me.
Right, and that's a really big problem because, and the courts have expressed concern about this, so I'm hoping they will continue to. There is something to be said for a patent that just ties up a single invention and how you implement that one invention, but not the idea of podcasts, not the idea of RSS feeds. Maybe someone has some really novel way of presenting a single podcast. Okay, well, then let's talk about that. I don't even know what that might be.
Right.
But that's a way more reasonable proposition than saying all podcasts, all RSS feeds. That's absurd. And that's the kind of thing we're working really hard to fight against.
Now, what are the implications if these people who have been sued, what are the implications if they just settle? I mean, does that create any more basis upon which a court would decide, or is that just creates more of a precedent in terms of just sort of the norms of the business?
Yeah, I mean, I think the worst part about that is it emboldens the patent trolls, right? It makes their business a little bit easier. It makes their business work a little bit more smoothly, and that's not ideal. If someone's actually facing this situation, they probably need to talk to a lawyer. To find out their best course of action. There are plenty of lawyers, by the way, who will recommend ignoring the letters. Because the other thing that we see happens is so many of these trolls send out so many letters that they don't always follow up with everyone. Not that I'm recommending anyone necessarily do that. You know, everyone's got to decide what makes sense for their business for, you know, in the moment they get that letter. It's a complicated calculation, to be sure. But, you know, we want to be in a world where those letters don't come.
Right. Tell me about it.
Yeah. I'm sorry you got one. And we're working hard, and we're not alone. There are a lot of folks working really hard to make that be the case.
All right. Well, I appreciate your taking the time today to sort of walk us through this. This is probably not going to be the last Majority Report. but who knows?
I hope not. You know, let us know. And you know, we're looking for the most egregious of these help kind of, you know, tell the story of just how bad the problem is. And, you know, there's one other thing, I guess, if I got another second, I'd say about
Please.
That. Part of the problem we've had is that until recently, the patent trolls hadn't really been going after individuals or small companies or people who put out podcasts, for instance. And all of a sudden, that changed about a year ago. So now the problem, if you will, you know, it makes good TV. It's a way more compelling story, for better or worse. But that's really gotten people's attention. So
From these patent trolls' perspective, I mean, what do they think they have to gain for hypothetically, let's say, coming after a podcast of this size? I mean, it's a decent size, but, you know, from a revenue standpoint, we're not living large, let's say. I mean, right. Hypothetically.
Well, I mean, speaking. I think if you're the patent troll, it kind of looks for better or worse, you know, it looks like a little bit of easy money. You don't need a lawyer to send out a bunch of letters,
right?
So it's pretty cheap to send out letters, and let's say you send out a couple hundred letters, a couple thousand letters, and you get a couple thousand bucks for each one.
I guess that's like sort of the Nigerian 419 email scam theory, isn't it?
I hate to tell you, I don't think it's that much different. And, you know, what's so frustrating about it is what they're doing is legal under U.S. laws. So we're trying to fix that because right now the trolls are exploiting these loopholes in the laws that let them create this tax on innovation in our country, that let them create this extra tax on entrepreneurs that we don't think makes any sense and we think it's bad. So we're trying to fix that.
Yeah, I mean, it's really stunning to see people abuse the system in this way, essentially just know that they can go after certain people regardless of the validity of their claim, but really just leveraging the idea of how expensive it will be to fight it.
I think that's right. And, you know, if people out there are interested in learning more, EFF.org, defendinnovation.org, we're working really hard to try and make this even just a little bit better, though we're trying to fix it completely, but... this isn't a good way to do business. This isn't the way to, you know, fix everything else that's wrong in our economy. It's just not.
And finally, the Mark Cuban chair to eliminate stupid patents. That's really your title, isn't it?
That's my title. You got it.
Well, I got to say that we're also open here to the Mark Cuban sponsored majority report in the event.
I'll let him know. See what I can do.
Thank you. All right. Julie Samuels, unless there's anything else you think I should know, hypothetically speaking, of course, please share.
Yeah, you know, I think we talked, I think it was important to kind of talk about the scope of the problem. And the part that's hard about these instances is that it just kind of sucks. It sucks to be facing one of these. And I wish I had a better answer for you. But the one thing that is helpful and I would ask people to do if they feel that they can, is to talk about it. Because so many times the targets of these letters and the targets of the lawsuits are, you know, afraid the troll's going to come after them or they sign some kind of non-disclosure agreement, so they don't want to draw attention to themselves. And that makes it harder for people like me to do our jobs because we're in a position where we need to convince Congress and we need to convince judges that there's a big problem out there. And unless we can get people telling the stories of just the magnitude of the problem, it's more of an uphill battle for us. So I would say, you know, tell your story, and if anyone else wants to tell their story, let me know, let someone know. We need to explain why this problem is so big so that we can get serious people to pay attention to fixing it.
All right. Well, I will be in touch, Julie. I appreciate your coming on and talking to us about this. And I wish I could say you allayed my concerns, but what are you going to do? Hopefully we need some reform in this instance. All right,
We're going to fix it. It's just going to take a little time.
Julie Samuels from the Electronic Frontier Foundation, the Mark Cuban Chair to Eliminate Stupid Patents. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
All right, folks, we got to take a break. And when we come back, we'll play that interview I did with Bob Edgar from Common Cause down at the Families USA Health Action 2013 conference. Interesting to listen to this interview and recall what Senator Whitehouse had to say about his perspective on filibuster reform. Give you a sense of the... we have the inside view, now we'll get the outside view when we return.
But it's coming home for lunch these days. Okay, continuing our coverage here at Families USA Health Action 2013. With me now is Bob Edgar. He's the president and CEO of Common Cause. Welcome back to the program, Bob.
It's great to be with you.
Now, last we spoke, you, Common Cause, had delivered documents to the IRS, had retained counsel in regards to Alex, filing and considering themselves for legal purposes to be a charity. And I think this audience is quite familiar with Alec from I think people know the American Legislative Executive Council. So we know that. Give us an update on that suit.
Well, as you know, the American Legislative Exchange Council, ALEC, has been trying to water down Obama's health care legislation. And for 40 years, they filed with the IRS as a 501c3 charity. They're just like the American Red Cross, the United Way. And what we discovered a little bit by accident, we got a whole stack of more than 4,000 documents that show that they do hardcore lobbying. And as your listeners may know, I was 12 years in the United States Congress. I know something about lobbying. I know when someone brings talking points, when they bring money to get people reelected, when special interests try to infiltrate the system. For 40 years, corporations, including the Koch brothers, David and Charles Koch, who were infamous in putting money in to try to corporatize democracy, for 40 years, they've been trying to sneak in to state legislative bodies on a number of issues. And just last year, this whole issue of Alec popped to the surface during the Trayvon Martin shooting.
Mm-hmm.
We had been working on it for about 2 years, doing the research. And so we found an agency inside the IRS that allows for individuals to file whistleblower complaints. So we found a pro bono law firm in San Francisco. They prepared the paperwork, and Bob Edgar and his wife Merle, because individuals file these whistleblower complaints, filed with the IRS, and we think sometime this spring the IRS will have to decide, should Alec operate as a charity, as they say in their filings, or should they be fined for tax fraud? And conservatives, moderates, liberals ought to be concerned about tax fraud. Here for 40 years, corporations, when they give $25,000 or $100,000 to Alec to host one of their several time a year spa meetings with state legislators, they shouldn't be getting tax reduction for that. They ought to operate under the rules that everybody else has to operate on and be honest about their lobbying. If we are found to be correct, if the IRS comes out and agrees with us, then both Alec and the corporations that have stayed with Alec will be subject to fines and penalties into the millions of dollars. And we announced when we filed our complaint that we're not going to accept, under this provision of the law, any of that money, because the whistleblower usually gets a portion of
a key TAM case. Is that right?
Right? Okay. They get a portion of the recovery. We think that's the public's money, so Common Cause and Bob Edgar are not going to receive any of those funds. And we think Alec has a right to exist. Individual conservative state legislators have a right to organize, put model legislation together, but they don't have a right to do it as a charity.
Right. We, as taxpayers, we should not be subsidizing the lobbying business of corporate America.
Right. Exxon and BP, the insurance industry, the healthcare industry, shouldn't be infiltrating and sneaking into the state legislature.
My understanding is they're doing pretty well already.
They're doing very well. This is just a secondary way for them, on top of already influencing elections with money, having money corrode the system even further.
Now, I know you guys at Common Cause are also have been working on the filibuster. You have a lawsuit with the Senate. Tell us about the lawsuit, and then I want to get your perspective on the deal. I don't know if I would call it even a filibuster reform deal as much as perhaps a time management reform deal, but I want to get your perspective on that.
Well, let me answer your second question first. We used the word capitulation. I think that Harry Reid and the Democrats capitulated. We saw an article by the Senate Minority Leader, bragging about how he won the battle last week. He got extra amendments that he can offer. I think he was right. I think the baby step that took place last week in reforming Senate rules will, in fact, come back to bite the Democrats when it gets to a tough issue like gun control, other tough issues. You're going to see the filibuster come back. And while they save some hours of time with the reform that they call a reform, Common Cause believes that, A, the filibuster is unconstitutional, that the filibuster should only be used in the rarest of circumstance. Up till 1970, it was used more often to protect slavery and lynching laws than it was human rights or civil rights. So we're in the federal courts arguing that the founding fathers were smart. They had seven specific instances where supermajority vote should take place. But read the Federalist Papers. Look at English common law. It states clearly that they were scared to death that one half of a legislative body would have veto power over all of the branches of government simply by forcing a super majority vote on every issue. And, you know, the people who can control the filibuster today represent only 14% of the total population of the United States.
Right. That's another, I mean, that's a... That's another thing that's just simply problematic about the Senate in some respects, is that it's fundamentally, it was established and it's sort of on rather sort of shaky grounds in terms of democratic principles. But let me see, the reason why I ask you this, because I spoke to two senators today, Senator Whitehouse and Senator Stabenow, and they had remarkably similar things to say about the filibuster reforms. They were happy about what it's going to do in terms of judicial review, judicial nominees, that it's going to speed up that process. There's a claim that because of the lack that there has been, I don't know if it's a function of a shift in the rules, but somehow there's been a discovery that the parliamentarian says that we no longer have to have constant quorum calls in the course of attempting to vote for cloture. So you get a one-off quorum call, people come down, and then that shrinks the 30-hour period. What, and I imagine you're skeptical of their optimism. What do you think, based upon the fact that probably, I think it was a year ago, Harry Reid said, boy, was I wrong.
He's going to say the same thing in another year. We need to go back to a talking
filibuster. But, I mean, what's going on here? Because I don't think the majority of Americans, in fact, I don't think that even a countable minority of Americans could tell you what the filibuster is in any meaningful way.
I think that's right.
And it's, so, I mean, who's his audience there? Is it you when he says that a year ago and he's going to say it a year from now and then not do anything?
Well, I think Harry Reid is a special case. Harry Reid supports assault weapons. He supports bullet clips. So he doesn't mind the filibuster. And he thinks that there'll be some things that will accrue to his advantage. There were several camps.
I mean, is that what's going on here? Is that...
Well, I think there are three camps.
Okay.
There's the Harry Reid camp. Harry's a very interesting and conservative Democrat. And he and McConnell shake hands all the time and stumble and fumble on the Senate side. Then there's a group of senators who have been vaccinated by the Bobby Byrd syndrome. Senator Byrd, who passed away a couple years ago, believed in the tradition of the United States Senate. And people like Senator Levin and Senator Feinstein. And then there's a third group of what I call reform-minded senators. The two senators you interviewed would be part of that. Senator Harkin, Senator Merkley, Senator Udall, who wanted to go much farther on this. Those reform-minded senators also included many new senators who I think once they see how the filibuster continues to devastate good policy positions will be angry that they didn't go further. So the Senate was divided into three camps. And we're a fourth camp because we believe it's totally unconstitutional. We liked what Senator Harkin wanted to do, back in 1994 when the Democrats were in the minority. He offered a bill to change the rules, keep it at 60 votes, but 3 days later make it 57, a few days later make it 55, and over a period of time go down so that finally you get a majority vote out of the Senate. They could have done that last week. They could have gone back to a talking filibuster. They could have even gone back to the point where the people calling the filibuster couldn't just email or call the leadership.
Right.
They'd actually have to go on the floor. And with the modern media, let's hear them out.
Right. I mean, it would make it, it would actually just involve a little bit more, a higher threshold of commitment is really, and that's what also the affirmative 41 votes was
right.
all about.
And do, but do you think they shouldn't filibuster at the front end of the decision either, because those who use the filibuster say, well, it extends debate. It doesn't extend debate.
But that's
now.
Gone now, isn't it, on the motion to proceed? I mean, isn't the filibuster gone there now?
Only if there's agreement. Let's keep an eye on it. Only if a certain number of senators in both parties and the leadership agree that it's gone.
Okay.
Otherwise, they can threaten a filibuster.
So that's a soft removal.
Yeah.
All right. Well, let me ask you this. I imagine you guys are. I know we've got to go in a moment, but I imagine you did a whip count on this, or were there 51 votes?
We were working with the coalition of reformers that included the new members and included some of the older members who have had to live under the filibuster. They were being stunted by Senator Levin and Senator Feinstein and some of the old-time ones that think that they may need the filibuster someday. But where they were really blocked was Harry Reid. If Harry Reid would have said to the reformers, let's work and let's make it a bigger baby step, let's uh-huh. have a talking filibuster, let's go back to the Mr. Smith goes to Washington time frame, I think they could have gotten it. But I think Senator Reid got cold feet, and I think in this case Senator Sanders was the only independent senator who voted with some of the Republicans to oppose the reform. But he was opposing it not because he wanted
didn't go
to keep
far
it
enough.
In place. He was opposing it because he wants to do away with it.
Well, Bob Edgar, from President and CEO of Common Cause, thanks so much for updating us on this.
I hope
Alex
your listeners thing. Will go to our website, www.commoncause.org. There's lots there in terms of reclaiming democracy.
Appreciate your time today.
We are back, Sam Cedar, on the live radio internet show, Majority Report. Folks, your support of this program makes it possible. We like to think of it as a sort of a donation. In sorts.
You can think of it as. That's exactly what it is.
Yes, in many respects. Who knows? Who knows how much longer we'll be around? I mean, we're just, it's all idle speculation. Hypothetically, it's possible somebody got a letter that other people didn't get. And so maybe they're next up. Who knows? Who knows? But you can support this program by becoming a member at majority.fm. Become a member, /become a member. Also, you can support this program completely divorced from any sequential episodes that you may or may not receive by going to justcoffee.coop. Fair trade coffee, tea, or chocolate. Use the coupon code MAJORITY. Get 10% off this longstanding radio program. Also, benefits from you're clicking on our Amazon link if you buy crap through Amazon at majority.fm/support the show. You can click through and
subscribe to our YouTube channel and any other of our many media dissemination.
I don't know what you're referring
links.
To, but people can subscribe to our YouTube channel at youtube.com/Sam Cedar. And in the better half of the program, which is just not necessarily in any way following sequentially after anything else, You can call in at 646-257-3920, 646-257-3920. I want to remind everyone that I'm a satirist. A lot of what I say is hypothetical and jokey in certain instances, to the extent that one could attempt to use it in a court proceedings. It would be rather shaky because everybody knows that that's the way I talk.
You speak in hypotheticals all the time. Did you see John McCain, what he just tweeted?
Yes, I did.
Different note?
Yes. All right. We'll talk about it in the better half of the program. There also we will talk about this Brooklyn College story, this Harvard story, this wonderful story of Governor LaPage up in Maine trying to teach kids good civic lessons about how they should consume media. Also, an interesting piece on what may determine the outcome of immigration reform. You can IM me at Majority FM. We'll take your calls, like I said, 646-257-3920. We'll be back in just a moment. In just a moment.
Soundboard's giving me more problems.
Well, that's the way that goes. Let's try this. You want me to do it?
Go ahead, yes. I'm restarting it.
Oh, let's try this one.
Should we take one? La poupe qu'il fait non.
Fuck off.
Try to avoid that.
Say no.